As we began taking a closer look at the church, I retold Dr. Fred Craddock's fictional account of the interaction between a settler and a clerk at the general store in Peter's Colony, which is near what is now Dallas, Texas. The man came in to buy supplies, and the clerk asked, "So what's in the wagon out there?" To which the man replied, "Oh, that's a church. You've got a church in that wagon." Well, we've gone outside with the guy and we've looked under the tarp. And we've seen a few of the things that were in that wagon. The Bible, the baptismal font, the pews, the liturgy and the music, the cross. And in the very center of the wagon is a table. At the center of every congregation, in every denomination, in every nation, in cathedrals and in homes, is a table, a place to come together and eat. And the meal that we eat together goes by different names. Sometimes we call it the Lord's Supper. Sometimes we call it Eucharist. Sometimes we call it Holy Communion. And each of those names reveals something important about the nature of the meal we share together at the table. When we call this meal the Lord's Supper, we are reminded of Jesus' last meal with his disciples. It was the Passover meal, celebrating Israel's liberation from slavery in Egypt. And as they finished the meal, Jesus broke the bread. And he poured out the cup and he said, "I'm sharing a new cup with you. A new liberation from slavery is coming." But they didn't fully understand. His disciples thought that liberation was from Rome. They didn't realize it was so, so much more. That Jesus would liberate us from our sin. And as we come to this table, we remember. The name Eucharist also has deep roots in the Passover tradition. Throughout the Passover meal, you pour the cup, and each time the cup is poured, a blessing is said. The blessing is, "Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who creates the fruit of the vine." The word Eucharist is Latin for thanksgiving. And it speaks to our attitude when we approach the table. We come to the table with thanksgiving. And sometimes we call the meal that we share here communion. Literally, come means with, union, with union. Because here at this table, we are united with Christ and with each other. In the Old Testament, we see that eating together is a sign of covenant. Whenever people made a covenant with each other, then they sat down and they ate and drank together. And as we come to this table, we are united. World Communion Sunday that we observe today was born out of the hunger for unity as we gather at the table. In 1930, Dr. Hugh Thompson Kerr served as moderator of the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church. And he saw the need for unity among Christians. And so when he went back to his church in 1933, he began in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, at Shadyside Presbyterian Church, a worship service of communion, where they invited people from other denominations to come and share in communion in unity. By 1936, the Presbyterian denomination had adopted the annual practice. And in 1940, the predecessor of the National Council of Churches encouraged churches around the world to celebrate World Communion Sunday. This morning, I read part of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And he takes the law, "Thou shalt not murder," and he expands on it. And I think it has a lot to do with our unity. The law points to God's will, not to kill someone. But following just that law won't establish God's kingdom, will it? We have to open our hearts to the Spirit of the law, says Jesus. In Jesus' day, the people of God looked forward to the day that they would have in God's court. And maybe sometimes, on occasion, you've had the same thought. Like, I can't wait to see the judgment you get. I'm not judging you or anything, but I can't wait to see the judgment you get. Well, see, they just really couldn't wait until God proved that they were right and their enemies were overthrown. The Israelites were an oppressed people. They were oppressed by Rome. They were oppressed by the rich aristocrats within their own community, the Pharisees and the temple elite. And so when they came to the temple, they came with a little bit of this seething anger underneath the surface. They looked at their brothers and sisters there and they said, Raca. And Raca really does not have an English translation per se. But I imagine that you have a few choice words, just use your imagination, I can't use them here, that you fill in the blank when you look at somebody and you grunt and you give the eye roll, right? Like when you're like, when you think about somebody, you have some words you use for that probably. Raca was their word. Okay? So Jesus says, don't approach with raca on your lips about one another. Judging and deciding, I can't wait until God gives you yours, is breaking the law, thou shalt not kill. And I would imagine that most of us feel self-satisfied that we don't have those kinds of feelings toward other people most of the time. But perhaps that's also the way that the leaders in Corinth felt. I mean, they had heard that teaching of Jesus and they didn't come seething to the table. They all got together. Bonnie read the passage from Paul that he wrote to the people in Corinth, that first letter. But see, Chloe had been to visit, and she came back to Ephesus where Paul was, and she told him how things were really going in Corinth. She says, you know, there are some divisions there. Some people are like, well, I follow so-and-so, and I follow so-and-so, and then we have some other issues with their table fellowship. And so Paul writes back to them and says, I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, by the name of Christ, that all of you will be in agreement and that there be no divisions among you, but that you have the same mind and the same purpose. They were so divided that Paul writes, when you come together and eat, you may call it the Lord's Supper, but it's not really the Lord's Supper that you're doing. The way you are observing this is so not okay that you can't really even call it the Lord's Supper. Because here's what was happening. In the early church, they took communion every week. And it wasn't just take a piece of the bread and dip it into the juice. It was a full meal. And it was in a home. And when they gathered for communion, they would head over whenever work was done that day. So, who do you think the first people to be done with work were? The people who had a little bit more money, right? The people who could afford to knock off a little early. And so they would go to dinner when they finished with work. And usually it was in an upper class home because the upper class homes had more space and more room, obviously. So they would get there, these upper class people, and they would arrive at the meal at their upper class friend's home, and they would sit down at the table. Now, their tables were low tables, and they usually were in a U-shape, and they actually sort of laid down at the table and just stretched out and put their hand behind their head and ate. Well, they started eating and drinking right then when they got off work. And then eventually some other folks showed up, you know, and they didn't have room right at the table, so they kind of found their space in and around the room, and they started eating. And then a little bit later, some other people arrived, but there really wasn't room in the room, so they just kind of stayed out in the foyer area, and they stayed eating and drinking. And then, you know, eventually, there wasn't really room in the house. And they couldn't really get in the courtyard anymore, so they were kind of in the street, those last people to get done working. And there really wasn't much left anyway. They were nearly out of food. So what was happening was not really unification around the table, was it? But a stratification of the people. The wealthy are inside around the table, drunk now and full. That's what Paul says. And the day laborers are out in the street hungry. Here at the table, Paul says, we remember Jesus. And we give thanks to God. And we are united as one. So as we come to World Communion Sunday, let us remember those who gather at the table in other places. Across the globe, according to the 2014 Pew Research Study, Christians are harassed for their faith in 151 countries. Open Doors USA is a nonprofit agency working to advocate for persecuted Christians, and they share that each month, 322 Christians are killed for believing. And another 772 experience violence because of their faith. I encourage you to go to their website, opendoorsusa.org, and you will find there information about persecution of Christians and requests for prayers and ways to advocate. As we come to the table, let us remember all who come to the table. Because as we come to the table, we come to be united. And so we examine ourselves. Are there people that I feel like grunting "Raka" at? Let me see them as my beloved brother, my beloved sister. Am I coming to the table, reclining with my friends and getting my fill without considering those who do not have the privileges that I have? Lord, let the division cease. Let all come to the table to be united, to give thanks to God, to remember Jesus. Amen.